This episode is what we like to call Suited and Booted, the best and worst superhero costumes as judged by us. All in good fun, of course. The three of us chop it up about costume designs dating back to the golden age of the 1930s and 40s, and we bring it all the way up to modern day. We cover some trends, shout out some cool shit, call out design faux pas, as well as some plain old design missteps. We also touch on how the box office success of comic book movies has affected how characters are portrayed on the comic book page. As always, thanks for listening. And if you aren't subscribing to the show, please do so at sidebarforever.com, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Good morning, Dr. Silberman. How's the knee?
Did you just have a brain fart?
I know Taekwondo.
Stop eating my sesame cake.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Fuck with me, and we'll see who shits on the sidewalk.
Come quietly, or there will be trouble.
Clearly, I wasn't talking to you, big titties. You cherub-looking motherfucker.
While you were still learning how to spell your name, I was being trained to conquer galaxies.
The real question is, what are those?
Yeah, there's a definite difference in terms of like 90s and 80s and even 2000s,
right.
Your way of doing things as far as technical aspects of things go. So,
I back in the day, back in the 90s, I was pretty friendly with an artist named Chris Hunter. I don't know if you guys know him on social media, but he's a storyboard.
Yeah, man.
You know him, D?
Yeah, we went to his house together, man.
Yeah. I believe you're right. He's a storyboard artist now, or at least he has been for the last few years. But when we met him, he was trying to break into comics, and he was friendly with the Gaijin guys. But I remember one thing that he said years ago as it related to that, because I think one of his fellow artists was giving him shit about some kind of a design he had, and he said, "Function is fine, but cool is the rule."
No.
You know, yeah. and that's kind of what it is for this particular medium is, sure, it should look like it works, but Kirby's shit never looked like it worked. It just looked cool as fuck.
For the most part, yeah. I mean, he had a couple of little things in there where like, okay, that might, scale down, take that line out of there, that might be some dysfunctional,
right.
You know?
Right.
I mean? But for the most part, it's like, mm-mm.
Yeah. Yeah. So, this conversation is called Suited and Booted, and we're talking about superhero costume designs. And we're going to kind of throw out in a ragtag fashion kind of a best and worst. This isn't any kind of an ultimate list, from us as far as that's concerned. It is just kind of, us just kind of glancing back and glancing into the present. And and just kind of throwing some stuff out there and just kind of talking about it and chewing it up a little bit. But I did want to start by saying, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, especially you, Encyclopedia Johnson. But, a lot of the early superheroes from the 30s and the 40s, they took their looks and their inspirations from, like, wrestlers and circus performers. If you look at the costumes and the colors and the kind of, underwear with the tights, a lot of it was that.
Rey Mysterio!
Well, I mean, think about it. Like, even if you look at, like, the characters from Watchmen, the Minutemen. They all kind of look like wrestlers. Those old black and white wrestling footage you see. And even Dick Grayson's origin, seems a little ridiculous now in modern day. His parents were circus performers. What the fuck? What, who knows somebody who works in the circus? Carnies, living and breathing, carnies or whatever. But even some of the names like Captain This and Mr. That and so-and-so the Fantastic, all of this stuff was... it's very pulpy and very, of the time. What do you guys think?
Well, I was going to say, yeah, I mean, that's exactly where the origins of all of that lie, you know, just in terms of, you know, you did have a lot of, you know, carnies and circus performers, you know, traversing the country. So you would have, say, a magician, you know, or somebody like that in that cast of characters like Zarko the Great, you know, come see him now, you know, stuff like that, right. You know. So, yeah, that's where the roots of it lie. But in terms of the costuming, I definitely agree in terms of, you know, the circus performers and so forth. But also, you know, I think serials were starting to take hold at this right. time as well. You know, like those Republic Pictures serials okay. and RKO serials and stuff like that.
Sure.
So you had a lot of that same type of costuming that kind of predate, you know, these superheroes right. also. You know, because there was no spandex. There was no any of that type of...
Right.
Synthetic material.
Seriously.
It was more like just long johns. And
Seriously.
You know, with the little flap in the back, you know, whatever. That's yeah. all they had.
They did the best they could with their head, man. Seriously, adapted. Right. You know?
Yeah, man. Like remember the old Batman series where his ears were all flapping? It just looked dumpy.
And he changed costume in the backseat of his convertible, too, yo.
Did he?
Exactly. Like,
wow. Yes, man.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Oh, it was very forgettable, sir. That's why you don't remember. It was pretty staunch beginnings, man. Pretty sketchy beginnings, man.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And
but yeah.
I think also too, man, like as far as the sidekicks are concerned, mm-hmm. you know, they were oftentimes either like a watered down version of the lead, like, you know, if you had a super patriotic lead, you would have, like, you know, a semi-patriotic sidekick, you know, his look would be like, yeah, you know, or like, you know, like the Human Torch and Toro, he was just smaller, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
And then, you know, as the looks, you know, started to progress into, you know, they got a little slicker and a little more streamlined. Even like the early golden age, you know, they looked more like uniforms. You know, they weren't so consumed with, you know, the outfits looking super skin tight and you know, almost grotesquely muscular. You know, where the, you know, every muscle is bulging outside of the, you know, it just looked like something that they put on. It laid on the skin like a shirt or a jacket or a coat or whatever, and then, you know, they went about their business. You know, I one thing I was thinking about too was, is like how trends, you know, I mean, it's easy to kind of shit on the 30s and the 40s because, you know, they were of their day, but, you know, like the 80s and the 90s were of their day too. You know, we saw lots of like goggles and hoodies, long coats and boots with waffle treads, you know, in the mid to late 80s or into the 90s and, you know.
The pirate boots.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was a big thing with Dave Cockrum. You know, the buccaneer boots and shit, and the collars and the that kind of stuff. You know, was very. I wonder. And again, Adrian, you may be the best one to cite this. When did the trend of cutting the top of the cowl off to show the hero's hair, the male hero's hair or the female hero's hair over the, when did that start?
Oh, man.
Do you think?
That actually started with Jim Steranko. There was a costume that he put on Nick Fury back in the Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Series, like one of those earlier issues. In fact, I think it's issue number 3 or 4 where Nick Fury goes to like this island and faces off with this black megalomaniacal scientist who's creating these dinosaurs and stuff, and that's the first instance that I see of hair coming out the top, you know, and like the rest of it, you know, is just like a regular cowl, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And then also you can extrapolate that too and see that a lot of that same technique was taken into the 90s. Oh, Jim Lee had tons of characters. When he redesigned Cyclops, the you know, the hair coming out the top, you know what I'm saying? Spartan, Grifter, there's a bunch of them. Rob Liefeld took it too.
Oh, seriously?
But the first place it started was that Steranko instance in that Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. issue back in 1968.
Now, did the Steranko, did that predate Kid Flash? Because Kid Flash had the hair coming out at the beginning, didn't he?
Ooh, you know what? You're absolutely right. Yeah. Good call. Yeah. Actually, that came afterwards. So then you would have to credit Carmine Infantino, yeah. I guess.
Carmine.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. But yeah, that was definitely a key trope of a lot of late 80s and early 90s, you know, costumes, that hair coming out the top, you know, and just all wild. If you think about it, especially like D, you're a big Travis Charest fan. Think of when Travis Charest started drawing this stuff and the hair was coming out like almost like a
pompadour.
That's
yo.
All he did. That's all he did, man. Even in Dark Stars, he was doing that. You know.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. That was definitely his thing. The crazy wild hair and the squat faces, man, are pushed together and pushed down.
I like that squat face.
Constipated.
but man,
oh, he's squatting all
right. Right? Yeah, yeah, man. But man, did he take off, dude? Man, did he prove? Dude? He went stellar, dude. It was like at some point, it was like in Wildcats covert action operation teams, whatever it was, where he took over it and was doing the main pencils and the covers for it. He just blew up, dude. He just like, I'm looking at the old masters. I'm working on my anatomy. I'm getting all this shit in line and in place now, dude.
I was gonna say, and it's funny how he actually, when he came in and started doing the costuming for like that second incarnation of Wildcats, for about 2 or 3 years there, the industry followed his aesthetic as far as costumes.
Yeah.
You know, said like that 99 through 2001 period.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he like, man, it's like he said, forget all that spandex. We're going to do it how it would realistically look. And I kind of credit him in a bit to being like kind of the pathway towards like those more ultimate version of costuming in the 2000s and beyond. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah.
I can see that.
When do you guys think that the to a great extent, costumes can either they reflect your power or whatever your special ability is. So, you know, if it's lightning, the single lens glasses for Cyclops, and you know, you just mentioned a minute ago, Adrian. If you had animal powers, you know, hawks, tigers, cats, bugs, you know, all of that. Yeah. Even the beast with those big ass hairy feet and hands, to eventually, you know, having fur all over, you know. Right. But the thing is like a character's costume was either to hide their true identity, like a Daredevil or Batman or Spider-Man, or it would be maybe even to celebrate their, you know, who they were, like, you know, like with Wonder Woman to some extent, Magneto, Thor, Loki and Hela, even Adam Warlock, you know, it's, you know, the look is to accentuate the grandiosity of the character or the bigness of them or where they're from, you know, that kind of thing. And I always find it interesting, you know, that, you know, because I've always been interested in masks, you know, not, you know, even predating, you know, Watchmen's obsession with masks. And, you know, the idea that masks either bring out who you truly are or they hide who you truly are. Depends on how you use them, you know what I mean? What about, like, teams? You know, like, you guys are talking about, like, Wildcats and all that. You know, teams are sometimes dressed the same, like, early and latter-day X-Men, or, you know, to suggest unity, or they would dress totally different, like some kind of a...
To me, my X-Men.
Yeah, or be totally different, like JLA and Avengers and Titans, yo. What do you guys think about teams and how they look and the idea of some of them looking, you know, similar versus, you know, dissimilar?
You know, for me, it depends on the world they're in. Like, I think their world is reflected in their costuming. So if you have a silly willy nilly world, you know, that's got everything goes. You can do all these complex color schemes and ideals and stuff like that, and it gets represented, reflected back in society too, in terms of what they're doing. Like, I think for a long time, and this is my main gripe with early DC comic stuff, and I realize they're the founders of a lot of different things, and I respect them for that. But my main problem with them was their naming of things and their colorization, their ideas. Yeah, they came from this circus idea and circus tropes, but at the same time, I was like, man, you guys are really not really putting too much into this, you know. And matter eating lad and bouncing boy and it was like, ugh, you know, I was like, it's lightning lad. I mean, this costume was cool, but I think it's just a thing wherein certain things work in certain situations, and the Super Friends were a silly ass idea, and their colors reflected that. That whole thing with the Batman documentary for the animated series.
Right.
They were talking about how, you know, they were limited to what they thought level of respectability was acceptable for children. So of course they scaled down many different potential ideas they may have had themselves because they were forced to by, you know, standards and practices.
Right.
You know, So it's like, wow, you know, what a world it would be, which we're starting to see that now, you know, what a world it would be, maybe not necessarily in a good way, that, you know, when we can truly reflect what people want to see in society and take the reins off of the, you know, off the shackles off of the creators, let them do what they want to do.
Well, you know, I had a thought about what you're talking about with the teams, costuming schemes, Swizz. And when you do look at the early X-Men, you know, they are all dressed the same,
yeah.
You know, and I think eventually they turned that into, that's the training costume, because you see a version of that for Kitty Pryde later on,
right,
before she gets her Shadowcat costume.
Right.
The New Mutants, when that book came out,
right,
they all wore that blue and gold with the red X belt.
Yeah.
You know, that was their training costume, yeah, with the Buccaneer boots, of course.
Yeah, of course.
That right, was the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah, man. And just over the years, that became a training costume up until, I'd say, the 90s, where they were just like, just get rid of that. Just get rid of that whole idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you also had, like, Doom Patrol. They were all dressed in white and red.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And that was a holdover for even Beast Boy. You know, even when he went over to New Teen Titans, he still had that same white and red costume.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a sense, you almost could, I don't know if it's a direct correlation, but if you think about the period that a lot of those were populated in, let's say the 60s, you know, you do have a lot of, like, music bands that dress the same, like the Beatles, and Frankie Lyman and the Four Freshmen, and stuff like that. Well, you know, everybody was just dressed the same, you know, and it just looked like, okay, we are a team, the Temptations and
yeah,
Motown and all that.
Man,
let's all dress in unison.
The Silvers, yo.
Yeah.
Boogie feet.
So, you know what I mean? But that's what I mean. It's just in terms of, let's be cohesive as a team,
mm-hmm,
and we'll all look the same. And then you see that kind of start to break apart. I don't know if this is a direct correlation. When the Beatles stopped dressing the same, about like 68, 70, they're like, nah, take them jackets off, take them blazers off. I'm going to dress like me, you dress like you, you dress like you, and Ringo, you dress like you.
Right.
And then, yeah.
But you know what? That's your point, though, Adrian. The only team that's maintained that sameness of costume designs for the team ethic is Fantastic Four. They always wear the same stuff.
Yeah, from the beginning.
You know? I mean, yeah, we always wear the same. But everybody else is different. You're right. But they're like, well, we're family. I don't give a damn what you think about me.
Yeah, you're right, D. You're exactly right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But everybody else changed. That's good. I mean, honestly, I didn't like the first Fantastic Four costume, dude. It was cool and stuff. I realized, you know, like you said, it was over his time. But I mean, when Byrne put his spin on it and changed that blue, that blue to white, and that dark blue, the black stripe to a white stripe, and it looked, with the costume to really dark blue, I was like, man, this is fire. This is on.
Yeah.
You
know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But what do you guys think about, like, you know, like, after the superhero films, you know, really became popular and really started to take over the box office, you know, going back to something like Blade in 1998, and then moving forward, that era is specifically what I'm talking about, that to modern day, where all of a sudden the characters in the comics started to reflect the looks of the characters in the films. So the aesthetic of the film was to try to make this as functional as possible and try to make it look like it would work in a real world sense, as much as they, you know, possibly could. Mm. And then we start to mm-hmm. see Spider-Man have, like, mech and tech in his uniform, you know, a la Stark Industries. Mm-hmm. In the comics, we see that. You know, we see Blade totally look like Wesley Snipes in the comics, when before that, you know, he looked like, you know, like you know, the hunter's jacket and the boots and, you know, the goggles. Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, certainly Batman. You know, yeah. Batman took on the look in many ways in the comics that he had in the films. Even if you really kind of go back to the Michael Keaton Batman, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But what do you guys think about that in terms of those looks, you know, the look going from the comic page to the big screen and then coming back to the comic page as it was, you know, as it was exemplified on the big screen?
I think it was very helpful, man. I think in a lot of ways, you know, what it did essentially was it kind of gave a plurality or a duality. Well, it brought together, it took the different dualities and brought them together in one same form. Like it, you know what I mean? Like it kind of made a difference in terms of making sure that, you know, this is the established way canon of the IP, you know, and it made sense. I mean, it made it easier to bridge the gap between the movies and for the comics, and hopefully bring the two together in some kind of ideal, you know, melting pot, you know, which they're still always trying to do, but they don't really do. They can't do because there's different people have different reasons. They do go to different things, you know. So
back in the period of like 2000-2001, that was a period that a lot of people referred to as kind of new Marvel, you know, because right. there was a brand new, you know, regime, so to speak, coming in, and they were very much, I don't know if it was a mandate, but they were very much about, let's do this cross-pollination between whatever's in the movies, it's got to be reflected in the comics. So that's why about then, where you have Grant Morrison's X-Men, the new X-Men.
Right.
Why did all the costume change to black leather with maybe like a yellow accent, you know, a yellow right. X, just a single yellow X somehow worked into, you know, the costuming, because that's kind of what was going on in those X movies at the time. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And you can also see that as well with Man of Steel, the recent Superman movie. You know,
right.
Jim Lee and I think Cully Hamner had did a redesign of Superman for the New 52. They had kind of like this, it was a high collar, but the noticeable thing was that it was a darker blue, a much more richer navy blue, you know what I'm saying? Right. And that was reflective of what was in the Man of Steel movie as well, you know? So you find a lot of that too, and you find those actually become trends too, you know? Once Blade hits and once the Matrix hits, it seemed like costuming in general, not just for that X-Men reference that I mentioned, but also just overall, let's do that for all these characters to get a sense of not only to make them look cool, but how would they really look in the real world? You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? If we did this, even though it's a comic book, you know, so right. that became its own trend, so to speak, its own wave that was cresting.
Yeah, I think everything changed. I mean, like you said, when it came down to the mixed marketing with trying to match the IPs, where things were, you know, seamless to some degree, at least influenced with the, so people would go to the comic store and get more of what they saw in the movies and vice versa, was kind of like the underpinning cue that maybe some of the editorial staff was getting to make things work, you know?
Ooh, yeah, so. And the other thing I just thought of too, the biggest example was the raised webbing on Spider-Man's costume being yes. reflective of the movie. And do That's you true. Know that there was a controversy about that? I think it was Alex Ross or someone had done a cover with the raised webbing mm-hmm. and they got pushback from Sony and Columbia because they were saying, no, that raised webbing, that's in our version of Spider-Man. Y'all can't use it. It's like, what?
Wow.
Wait a minute, don't we? Isn't this the same character? Right. What?
We started this gangster shit.
Right. you can't use that raised webbing. Now, wow. I think eventually they just got over it and said, okay, whatever, because you started seeing it on a lot of comic book covers for Spider-Man titles around that time anyway, you know, a short while afterwards. But I remember there was a controversy initially that, yeah, you can't use that. Sony said that's our trademark for this character, for this movie, this version of this character. And I was like, wow, that's crazy.
That goes to show a lack of storytelling ideals and ethics that go into these projects overall. Mm-hmm. Because the reality of the situation is, it's like, you want as seamless of a process and transition as possible. I shouldn't give a shit about which movie house it belongs to. I came to see the character. I didn't give a damn about y'all squalling in the background. You know what I mean? That's like when it comes down to the stories and how you have the variation between what Chris Claremont did, and then you had Chris Claremont, and you had John Byrne, and you had Chris Claremont, and I think it was Paul Smith.
Yeah.
I shouldn't give a shit about the transition, but I did because it was obvious to me, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to show you which one I prefer. You know which one I preferred already. It's Legend. but you know, so, you know, the whole thing was, I think that, you know, like Swain always says, and he's right, man, it's like art, something that happens because, by accident. It's not something that happens intentionally when it comes to these people getting together doing things. You know what I mean?
Well, in film. I'm saying that in film.
Oh, right. Yeah. But I'll go even further, man. I think, you know, when it comes down to, you know, it's like an old, who said that saying, man, you always say it. It's very, 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 very poignant, man. It's, we don't want it done well. We want it done yesterday. We want it done Thursday.
Oh, many people. Yeah.
And it's like, okay, come on, guys. You can't have it both ways. I mean, what you're basically trying to tell me is that you don't really appreciate the artist and the creative process. All you want to know is that it's done. You can sell it. And then we get, and
that's
then,
it.
And that, but that comes across too. When you throw out schlock shit, you get schlock ass prices, and you get schlock ass returns. So when if you invest the capital intellectually into the process as much as you invest in as far as money goes, you get a lot more from it. So that's all I'm saying.
I don't know, man.
I mean,
they made an awful lot of Transformer movies, yo, and they were did. Crap.
Well, but there you go. That's arguable. That's a question of subjectivity. I mean, they made their
no,
money
no,
back.
No, no, no. The box office rules.
They made their money back, though, dude.
Yeah.
Those films?
Yeah.
They never would have made, what, five of them if they weren't making money?
Yeah, sure, exactly.
Right. No, no. I'm saying they made money. Those films are successful.
Right.
Nobody makes a sequel to anything that's not successful. I mean, they kind of do it nowadays. Like, you know, you see sequels and stuff, and you're like, what? but those Transformer movies are super successful. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have made five of them if they weren't making hundreds of millions of dollars.
Sure. Right?
Like, every time. So, and they're not great quality. They're not great movies.
Right.
But
they're fun. They're fun, though. And they're somewhat immersive to the Hasbro person, to the kid in you. You know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Know.
That's all.
Yeah. No, but... You guys make some good points, though, especially as far as, like, Spider-Man, even having Spider-Man kind of having, like, mech.
Yeah.
A kind of a mechanized, a tech kind of a look to his costume, as opposed to looking like spandex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is what we had seen in the Raimi films, you know, prior to that. So, let me ask, because this is something that I think is, you know, has been brought to the fore a lot in the last few years, probably the last decade really is how women characters have been portrayed in comics in terms of their outfits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you go back to the Golden Age, you know, it was skirts and boots and bouffant hairdos and, you know, boots with heels on them and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then as we moved into the 80s and the 90s, I mean, it was almost bikinis and bustiers and, you know, and super high heels and
Stripper, cut to the chase.
Yeah.
Stripper wear.
Yeah.
That's the way it was. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, and I never loved it because it was just weird to me to be like, you know, lusting after whatever. It just, that just didn't make sense to me. But it always kind of hit me, even when I was younger, that it was super non-functional. It's like, okay, how do you fight somebody in a bustier without a titty jumping out?
Well, thing is, though, that would be surprising in a battle, and you might freeze and mess up because you're caught off guard by it. So therefore,
see, but that's the standard. That's the standard go-to that everyone says. How does Red Sonja fight? Well, she, you know, some might pop out, and they might be surprised. Like, dead that. That's overused, yo. That turkey is overcooked, yo. Just for real, yo. But okay then, all right. So, but to your point, Swizz, just in terms of that kind of archetype really coming to the fore. Would you argue that that kind of started in the 70s with the invention of Red Sonja? Or in a more populist sense, you have more of those costumes from the League of Superheroes and X-Men Storm, you know, that type of thing.
So, but I mean, I think actually, I mean, to your point, I think it probably does start back in the 70s, like mid to late 70s. And then it definitely was something that Dave Cockrum used quite a bit.
Sure.
Dave was the man when it came to designing costumes, man. His costumes, to me, are some of the best in the industry still to this day. Mm-hmm. People riff on his designs, mm-hmm. they remake them, but they can't replace what Dave did, man. You know, so
yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, were they lack of social consciousness? were they designed to titillate and to make little boys feel you know things they never felt before? You bet they were, because it got them into the comics. You know, it got them into the comics, got them to read it and see. You know, it was our first exposure to a Sports Illustrated magazine. In a lot of ways, it was our you know, entry point. Good.
I was gonna say, you know, to that point, and you know, I don't mind admitting it, you know, right. While we're talking about this, I was that teenage boy that bought them Omaha Studio swimsuit editions.
Well, yeah.
And bought all them. Remember, Image was just coming out with swimsuit edition, and then Marvel was doing it too.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it was just like, I would buy it because, like you said, D, that was the first tentative step into that man, next thing. And some of those costumes was like, woo!
Yeah, man. Brian Stelfreeze's Void character, man, in the swimming pool?
Oh,
sir.
Don't even get me started on Joe Jesko's She-Hulk at the beach.
Yes, sir.
Woo! Absolutely. I'm sorry, we get off track. Man. My bad, Swish. You go ahead.
No, no.
It's great costuming, man. You know?
The point, though, is that they were all very much seen through the male gaze.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, objectified to a greater degree
mm-hmm.
than anything else. And now I think you see, you know, when female characters are redressed or redesigned, you see less of that now, and you see them, to me, you know, from when I look around, you see some really interesting ones, and ones that are a little more functional, and still, you know, don't necessarily, like, shy away from being sexy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just they're not so overtly so.
Right.
And that kind of could lead us into our best and worst picks,
mm-hmm.
Because I was going to say, one of the ones that I really like in terms of, well, let's start with the worst, and then let's end with the best.
Okay,
because that'll probably be. Let's end it on a positive note, as opposed to a
yes, exactly.
A less than positive note, but as far as like old school designs,
mm-hmm.
I have never, ever, ever, ever,
ever, ever, ever, ever, ever
liked that old Catwoman design with the long skirt and the cat of nine tails.
Yeah,
in the ears. I hated that.
Really? Like, never, period?
Never, never. It looked dopey to me. You know, why was she dressed that way? What is she going to accomplish in that long skirt other than tripping over the damn skirt? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true, man.
And yeah. And another one, as far as the sexy stuff goes, I never liked Starfire's design. Perez's design?
See? You blasphemed. Yeah, hey. You blasphemed.
Hey. I mean, it was a bikini, yo.
Yeah.
And
it seemed to be almost kind of like very Barbarella influenced.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, but I never dug it. I always thought it was like, this is just weird.
Wow.
Sure.
You know, she's got these big old boobs and this, you know, basically like a handkerchief top covering them. And I'm just like, okay. If you didn't shoot fire, you know. Anyway, she doesn't need to do anything to distract anybody. She's powerful enough to kick your ass without having to distract you. But
yeah,
you know, as it relates back to that joke you all just made. But what are some of you guys' worst picks?
Man, Calendar Man.
Calendar Man.
And there is one specific version that I'm thinking of in particular. Walt Simonson did a Batman story in Detective Comics, and it had Calendar Man as the villain. Now, here's the crazy thing, though. You know, Simonson can do no wrong. So he could take a whack costume, a super whack costume, but when he draw it, it looked good, you know? But still, the design itself in this particular version was terrible. It had, like... It had, like, the, you know, the sheets for the individual days. They were coming out of his shoulder, and it had a calendar. It was just, it was terrible. I was like, oh. If anyone is interested in looking it up, it's, like, Detective Comics, like, in the 480s. 470, late 470s, 480s. Mm-hmm. You'll find it. You'll see it, and it's just, like, it's bad, Joe. Terrible. Yeah. And I got another one. I think we all three can agree on this. I didn't think we all would, but Wolverine's blue and gold costume.
Ugh.
As classic as that is, it's not a good costume. It just is. I'm sorry. It's not.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Well, let's put the one he fought the Hulk in. The one they fought the Hulk in with the whiskers. That was ridiculous, man. The whiskers. What are the whiskers?
The whiskers. Meow.
Hey, man. Wasn't that Herb Trippy?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was.
But
but
John Romita Sr. actually designed that costume.
Okay.
The whiskers. Okay.
Meow. Meow.
Yeah. What are you gonna do now? See, I'm gonna get you now. See, my claws.
And you know the crazy thing is that you know when I first got into comics and I saw two different versions of Wolverine, I didn't know what was going on with that. Like I saw him obviously in his blue and gold, and then I would see him in the other one we'll probably mention later on, his brown and orange. But that blue and gold is what I kind of got into Wolverine as. But I've never liked that. Like, it's not stealthy. No. Like, his character is supposed to be stealthy, and you're walking around looking like this big lemon popsicle. You know, it's just, it don't make no sense, man. No, bruh. No,
man. And he had those little tiny claws, too, didn't he?
Yes, he had the little telescopic claws. Yeah.
They weren't fully grown yet.
Yeah, yo. He hadn't matured.
Man, what about you, D? What you got as far as worse?
Interesting enough, man, more things come to mind as you say it, man, but, the first one I have on my list is Radiation Roy.
Radiation Roy? What's that for?
Yeah, wow. Radiation Roy is like this crazy, ridiculous, reductive Russian character that apparently is in DC. He's in DC Comics. Related to the Legion of Superheroes, no less.
Okay.
And he's got this really stupid looking reddish brown costume with these scalloped implements on his shoulders. Like it could be like fleshy or not moving or whatever. It's a ridiculous looking character, man.
Uh-huh.
It's and then the idea of Radiation Roy. What does that tell you, dude? I mean, there's just very little. I mean, anytime you alliterate like that, dude, there's very little redemptive quality in that alliteration. Like, you can tell it comes from the 70s, from a very certain period where Peter Parker, so on and so forth, these different characters had to rhyme, dude. So that's one of them. As much as I can't stand the Bouncing Boy, dude. The name and the characterization.
See, you guys are talking about just bad characters. What else do you expect?
The costume was horrible too, dude. It was really weird, and it was always emphasizing like the fact that he was overweight.
Right. Yeah, of course.
And it's just like, I mean, not there's anything wrong with being overweight. Some people have that. That's just a natural thing. But I mean, it was just a thing where, okay, this guy amongst which one of these things is not like the others. Which one of these things is not the same? It's okay. He must be Bouncing Boy, you know, out of all of them. You know what I mean? He could have been muscular. Yeah. He could have been muscular and just poofed out to do the bouncing thing. Why don't you be a little chubby boy? You know?
Chubby boy.
You know?
People and fat then, shame and Bouncing Boy, yo.
Yeah, yo. And then, interestingly, as much as I love Sienkiewicz, Bill is my man. You know, I love Bill. Don't mess with Bill. But, you know, the one thing I didn't care for in his whole repertoire for dealing with the X-Men.
Okay,
was,
be careful now. Be careful now. Hold on now.
Tread lightly.
Hold on now.
Well,
right.
You know,
hold on now.
What?
Hey man, I guess like it is, bro. His version of Warlock and the Magus were horrible.
Hey, wait a minute. Hey,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Jesus. Warlock. Podcast over.
Right? Warlock, this is crazy, like a Quetzalcoatl, you know, jerky looking mess of an organic creature moving around. It was weird and out of place, dude. It didn't work for me. It was weird, dude. The inconsistent costume where sometimes a line would be this part in his head, you look at the next frame, it's over here in this part of his head, and it was a god awful mess, dude.
But I would almost argue that Warlock was almost like the quintessential Sienkiewicz looking character. Just all crazy looking, you know?
I would say that and Legion. You're probably right. Those are the two which closely most and you know involved with, you know.
Legion had that MC Search hair.
He did. And then that psychotic laugh, dude, and then that break with reality. You see everything just like get focused and his teeth would come out at you and stuff. You know, so that was cool though. I dug that. Like when Bill was doing that freaky frenetic stuff, it was cool. But see, Warlock had no form, and it bugged me. The fact his name was Warlock, because I knew Warlock to be a Jim Starlin character, which is on my a lead into my best list. You know that you know we'll get into later, but. Yeah, I didn't like his Warlock, dude.
Okay.
You
know,
he could have kept that. So what else you guys have on your list?
Yeah, what about you, Sis?
Another easy one. Mm-hmm. The Mandarin.
Oh, you don't like the Mandarin, yo?
Oh, no.
The costume?
Racist.
All versions
of
the Mandarin?
It.
Or are you talking about
always
that 60s version with the little mask and stuff? With him.
Yeah, well, dang,
yo, I have rings on every finger.
Right?
Man.
I am subtly racist too.
Yeah,
because
not even subtly, it was fucking overt with it.
Yeah. As I stroke my long beard, and I have those zero pilot goggles on my eyes, you know.
Yeah, come on, dude. Terrible. Another one is Mr. Mixie's Piddalick.
Oh. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, I was going to say, check yourself.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's how you pronounce it.
That's okay. Close enough, man.
Yeah. And that's goofy character, the goofy purple and orange, purple and orange with the derby hat on.
Hey, yo, that derby hat was life, though.
You know what, so I'm going to give you a theory on that too, Swizz, in a minute. Go ahead.
And he always annoyed me in the same way that the character on the Flintstones, Gazoo, annoyed me. You know, just this little you know, impish character from another dimension floating around. It's like, ugh, get out of here.
Now, that character came about, that character came along in the 70s, man, right? Okay.
Earlier
than that.
60s?
Okay. 60s, okay. At least, yeah.
Yeah.
I recall watching, you know, several Saturday morning cartoons where he was on the Super Friends, right?
Uh-huh.
Always challenging Super. I'm going to get you, Batman, and you can't guess this, and read my name. And, you know, I think it seemed to me like he was definitely a shoo-in for selling more cereal. In particular,
I'm telling you. Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
No. But
his Lucky Charms.
Yes, the Magical Delicious Show.
Dang,
you know? Because it was always a thing where, you know, I always found myself like relating that character to Lucky Charms. You know, and I didn't like either one of them. But you know, it was like Lucky Charms sucked to me. And so, but then, you know, it's like, okay, I can see that there's some kind of like close, like a little relevancy, visually at least, as far as that goes. I know it's a stretch, but it's kind of funny.
Man, I got another one. I think we had mentioned it earlier in the conversation. Man, even as a 90s kid, an image baby, I've got to say, there's three, and I'm going to group them all together.
All right.
Number one. Spawn. That costume makes no sense. None. You got some chains, and then a knockoff Spider-Man costume. He got a cape. It's like, I know McFarlane came up with the design and the character when he was a teenager, and it shows. It looks like it. You know? And I remember at the time when I was 13, it looked like the coolest shit ever.
Yeah.
But when you look back at it with like fresh, grown ass eyes, you're like, ah. Wow. Whoa.
Yeah.
And then these other two, I'll pair these together, I should say. the big thing too in the 90s when I was getting into comics was characters in long brown trench coats. And were personified by, even though they were two of my favorites at the time, Jim Lee, when he drew Gambit, and then he came along with his own Wildcats, and he drew Grifter.
Grifter, yeah.
If you picture them in your mind, if you know what the two characters look like, it's almost like Lee just transposed, okay, I'll take Gambit and make him blind, and then I'll give him a mask, and then he'll still have them crazy boots, though, but it's just like, you didn't change much. It's like, you really wanted this to be successful when you went to Image, so you're just like he had some leftover Gambit pages, and he just erased them right quick and said, yeah, that'll work, yeah.
Yeah,
and then just the crazy hat coming, the crazy hair coming out the top of the cowl, the missing cowl that we discussed earlier. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh man.
Oh. You could say the same thing though about Rob Liefeld or Liefeld or however you pronounce his name.
Liefeld, yeah.
His design of Deadpool, which was basically Deathstroke the Terminator.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah.
Even down to the name, Wade Wilson and Slade Wilson.
Oh yeah. Oh man. Damn, you're right. Oh man. Dang. Yeah. Man.
Yeah. It was almost like Rob's his like ambush bug version of Deathstroke.
Ambush bug.
No, you're right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's very interesting. Makes you say that, dude.
Yeah. But look, as you say that to Spawn actually made my best and my worst list. There are days when I see an image of Spawn and I'm like, damn, that does look kind of wicked. You know, the way it comes off with that cape that's kind of going everywhere and all of that. And then there are times, like you said, where it just looks like someone like ate a Spider-Man, Batman, Ghost Rider sandwich and vomited it up.
Yeah.
The influences are right there, dude. You can see them, they're fully. It's like, let me take the best of the best and put them into one being. There he is. That's my character, you know?
Yeah.
Very, very, very juvenile in a lot of ways.
But, yeah.
But very impactful. I mean, he's turned into like a hell of a ride, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess say another best, another worst for me would be friggin' Juggernaut, you know, that dumbass dome helmet and then brown mustard ass stained Captain America pants, yo. Complete with the boots, yo. With the Buccaneer boots. So what the hell is up with that costume, dude? That was
wasn't that your boy Cockrum? Didn't Cockrum design him?
I don't know, but it was god awful, dude.
No. That came from the 60s. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Actually, he preceded all of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know who did it, man. But, man, they should have thought again, dude. It just wasn't right.
Well, what do you think of his current design, Juggernaut's current design? Because it seems like that's one costume they just, like, if he was in a lineup, you wouldn't be able to pick him out and say, oh, yeah, that's Juggernaut. You know what I'm saying?
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it lately. Would it change his helmet? Is that the thing they did?
No, they actually still keep the helmet, you know, except it's all black now.
You have to.
Yeah.
that's part of his legend. That's part of what he
Nothing stops the Juggernaut. Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
As far as bad villains goes, I got to go back to the very heart of the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
Kraven the Hunter, yo.
Oh, yeah.
Dang. Like, you ain't never liked that costume at all?
I was just mystified by it as a kid. I'm like, who is this guy wearing the leopard skin leotard?
Yeah. Right,
cut off at the calves. He's got on the ballerina slippers. And he's got this weird rug on his shoulders.
I liked it. It was like a lion's cow, wasn't it? Like a lion went around his
shoulders. But the way Ditko rendered it, it looked like a fur coat or a rug. Y'all was just like, what?
Yeah, man.
So let me ask you this before we move on to the best then. For terrible costumes that you or anyone would consider terrible, can a certain artist make a terrible costume look cool?
Yeah.
Is it possible?
Absolutely.
Like, okay, like for instance, you were talking about Kraven the Hunter, all right? Mm-hmm. In my mind, when I picture Kraven the Hunter, I'm going back to Kraven's Last Hunt with Mike Zeck. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the only time he's looked really cool to me. Okay. You know, when Zach drew him. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Right. Not to say, man, maybe it wasn't a costume, but it was a character that I thought was like Drek until I saw, what's the artist's name that did the Alan Moore version of Swamp Thing?
Are you talking about Talibin?
Talibin
or Bissett? Okay.
When Talibin Bissett got a hold of Swamp Thing, man, it changed my whole thought process as far as what a creature could be, as far as a creature monster, you know, questioning whether or not he was good or bad or indifferent, and you know.
But do you think that had to do also with Moore's stories, or is it just strictly their artwork and their rendition of him?
I think the visuals alone impacted me. So before I read the story, I saw like a picture of them sitting with Abby in the water in the swamp.
Okay.
I was like, man, that's it right there, you know.
Okay. You didn't like Bernie Wrightson's version of the Swamp Thing?
Oh, well, yeah, I guess I kind of did. I'm thinking of another. You know, no. I'm thinking of the Man Thing. Yeah, I get the two things mixed up. Man. No, it's just the Man Thing. I still like the Man Thing. Yeah, with the rhinoceros. Yeah. Rhinoceros. Yeah. You know,
looking like Snuffleupagus.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, Man Thing should be on the worst on our worst list. Yeah, I've never dug him.
Then I had real quick around my worst. I had Captain Marvel in them blue Speedos from the 70s.
Oh, I like that, yo.
That was some the blue Speedos.
That was Gil Kane, right?
Yeah, it was Gil Kane, yo. Blue Speedos. I was like, okay, man, what's going on, bro? What alien dresses like that? Then I had Pip from Warlock, you know, the little troll guy.
Yeah.
Okay, come on. He had a big old stomach, a cigar, and some shaggy draws. some shaggy draws and some little moccasins for shoes, dude.
Yeah.
I was like, what is that, man? Because, you know, trolls basically are supposed to be like monstrous creatures, dude. Somewhat malevolent and somewhat, you know, respectable in terms of their visage. And he was none of those things, dude. You know, it's like, nah, dude, this is not a cool character at all to look at. But go ahead.
I was gonna add one more before we move on. AIM, though, advanced idea mechanics with the buckets on it for helmets and the yellow costume looking like Devo.
When you want to take over the world, you must get it.
Oh, man. All right, yeah, so, yeah, we can move on if you're ready, Swiss.
Well, Swiss, we agree on one, though. Swiss, we got to come together on this one, dude. We both agree on the same one, dude. The brother's name is what? Tyrock,
yes. Tyrock with the disco collar and the chains.
Oh, my God, yo. Didn't he have, like, no pants? His was just...
Yeah, he had, like, he had briefs on, and then he had, like, little elf-looking shoes like Robin used to wear.
Really?
Yeah.
Dang, yo. Why you do the brother like that, man? Dang.
Hey, man. He was horrible, dude. Tyrock. Even Mike Grell took a swing at him doing, and he still couldn't help his costume, dude.
Dang, yo. Yeah.
And the Grell era is the era that I found him in, too, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. But as far as bests are concerned, I'm going to run down just a couple of quick ones so we can get through it.
Okay. Yeah.
I think even though he started out in pulp novels and in pulp magazines, The Shadow... Mm-hmm. You know, who has been portrayed in comics as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that design of the hat and the nose and the red scarf as a pop of color, as a predecessor to Batman and to Zorro, he is preternaturally, you know, just the quintessential, you know, figure that moves in the night and melts into the night.
Mm.
And I just think everything about him except all of the, you know, the different, you know, identities.
Mm.
Everything about him in terms of, you know, the laugh and, you know, melting into the shadows and the 45s and, you know, and just everything about him, I think, just really works. But specifically that design, I think, is just unmistakable.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely unmistakable. Another one, this is kind of just something I've been akin to. Doctor Strange in the 70s with the mask.
Mm.
I've never understood why he put the mask on.
It was just marketing.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Characters who had masks and had their faces covered did better than characters who didn't. And I think that's why they did it.
Okay.
That's what I had always heard.
Wasn't his mask kind of like, there were two different kinds of masks. One was like form-fitting, then one was kind of almost like the Hood of Justice, where it was kind of loose, wasn't it?
No.
It was always tight?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
All right.
And then also Punk Rock Storm, or as I call her, Storm.
Punk Rock Storm.
Yeah, well, no, that's the only Storm for me. After I saw that, I was like, that's the only one for me. Okay. Like SWV, yo. Okay.
That's that Pat Benatar Storm, yo. That Joe Jett Storm. Yes, sir. Yep. That's it for me right there, man.
Okay.
We tread no hollow ground, yo.
No, she was okay. Again, you know what? I like her when certain people draw her. Like some people do it, and I'm with it, you know. But some people the people that made it what it was initially didn't do it for me. You know, the character Chris was drawing it, yeah. So I didn't get it. And then it was like this thing where in the comic where she was fighting Kalisto.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And Kalisto was done in a way which wasn't too interesting to me. She was kind of weird, you know. So I'm gonna run mine down real quick, yo. So, Nightcrawler.
Okay. Sir, yeah. Simplistic.
Without question, one of the best costumes in comics ever. One of the most interesting characters in terms of visage and you know was.
I agree.
Was he a devil? Was he? But he was one of the nicest, most calmest spirits. He always helped everybody, dude. That's what he did. Yeah. You know, and like Swain said, and good.
I was gonna say, in a really ballsy design,
mm-hmm.
like to make someone look that demonic and that unlikable,
mm-hmm.
but make him one of the most lovable characters on the team. That was to Cockrum's credit.
Yeah. I mean, three fingers, dude. Yeah. And three toes, dude. I mean, come on, you know. I mean, it's and a freaking demon tail, you know, which in comics was the thing that was definitely synonymous with the devil, of course, thanks to you know everything that came before it. Galactus, the burn version.
Okay.
You know, Galactus is my shit, yo. You know, I enjoyed thoroughly the early versions with Buscema, you know. And how he kicked it and brought him to life, reality into life. But to see Byrne doing, man, and different kinds of angles and repose, and to see him get in those situations where Galactus fell, man, that rocked it for me, dude.
Was Byrne's version much different from Kirby's, you think?
It was just cleaner. Mm. It was cleaner. Mm. And Byrne always had a way of his lines, when it came to tech stuff, made sense. Like, it would work.
Yeah.
That was Byrne's gift. Like, he one of his, you know, many to me. You know, he was a great designer, and very illustrative in some manners, and very, very lush. His backgrounds didn't look rushed most of the time. There were times, you know, deadlines, I imagine. Again, Colossus, from the great mind and great pen of Dave Cockrum, from the time he was in X-Men number 99, coming out of the cover, running at you, dude.
Right.
Man.
Right.
Man. And the fact it was organic steel, sir.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't like a costume he put on. This was part of his body. It's like, wow. So you start looking at different serrations in his body, his musculature, and seeing how things turn. And it was like, and certain artists that really knew the musculature and how to do it, they knew exactly how to make those things emphasize those different bands and stuff.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So, well, give me a couple of yours, Adrian.
Yeah, sure, man. Two of my tops would be Taskmaster and Deathstroke, man. Mm. Bomb ass designs. Man, yeah, especially man. That Taskmaster, the original version by George Perez. Woo!
Yes, man. Yes,
woo!
Man. Yes, man.
That orange, that black, and that silver or white. Woo!
Man, when that comic came out, dude, that was around the time I first met Adrian, first met Swain, and first met Mike, man, and Don, I think around at Oxford Bookstore. And yep. when I saw Taskmaster take all those mugs to task, take all the Avengers to task, and beat them based on how he studied them,
mm-hmm.
and he can implement their and parry what they did, I was like, man, this guy is badass, dude.
Yeah.
It was badass, dude.
Yeah, so, yeah, yo, just a great design. The hood and the skull mask, too. Mm-hmm. Like, he's hooded death. You know what I'm saying? And I have all of your abilities, and I can learn what I don't know and defeat you. Wow. And then Deathstroke. Slade Wilson. That shit sounds like an old 70s R&B singer. The newest album by Slade Wilson.
That's it.
Yep. But yo, Slade Wilson with the eye patch. And just, man, again, it's crazy. I think Perez also designed him as well, right? For the new Teen Titans?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny how he had the same color scheme as Taskmaster and how much that particular color scheme just works, man. That orange and dark navy blue and that silver or white. Oh man, it's just great.
And arguably it's the same kind of weapons too, dude. The same weapons.
You're right. A sword and right, man. Just great characters too.
Buccaneer boots.
Yeah, of course. Of course. You have to.
Those.
Man, but then also Namor, the black costume.
Oh right? Yeah. Oh, that's so fantastic.
Man,
I love it.
That open, I don't even care that it's open chested. That shit just make it even more badass, man. Yeah, and then the yellow fins underneath. You know what he looked like, yo? He looked like that Elvis 1968 comeback special.
Yep.
That's exactly what I think of.
That's perfect. That
like
is
he's just
perfect
wearing the
analogy.
Leather costume. He's just, oof, that's bad, yo. Woo, that's a bad man right there, yo.
He is a bad man.
Yeah.
Ooh, that costume in particular. Woo.
Namor's no joke, dude. Namor's no joke, dude.
Oh, man. And then I got one more on my list, man. And y'all gonna laugh me out, but it's okay. Wonder Man in that red safari jacket.
I kind of liked it, yo. I don't think it was great, but I liked it a lot.
Yeah, yo. That's the only Wonder Man I will acknowledge, man. That's the only one I will acknowledge. That the other ones before that just looked like just funky. Like you remember the issue where they fought Count Nefaria? And that's a great story, but the Wonder Man version of that is like, just look all whack.
The thing is, though, Adrian.
What's that?
I will say this, man. To your point, I think you're right. I think some colors just don't mix, and sometimes green and red in certain proportions
exactly
mess it up. Because if you take the color out of it, it's actually not a bad costume.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's weird, and it's obviously comprised of many other different layers. Like everybody wanted to give everybody Captain America stripes in the center, dude.
True.
Like, what's that about? It works for Cap, but I mean, you got to give it to the Juggernaut. You got to give it to the friggin'. There's numerous other heroes they tried to do that on. It didn't work for them the same way. I agree, dude. I like this costume. I like that costume only because of the Count Nefaria story. If it hadn't been for the Count Nefaria, I wouldn't like the costume.
yeah, so, man. Oh, and I got just one more. I'm sorry. This is my last one.
Well, you good?
No, you good?
All right, Wolverine in a brown and orange costume. Mm-hmm. That's like the Wolverine that I acknowledge above all others. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That and that's so indicative of an era. As well, that's that Paul Smith, John Romita Jr., Mark Silvestri, right up until Jim Lee. It just says an era. Oh, and Alan Davis when he drew the Mutant Massacre.
Right.
Just that whole era of X-Men, that brown and orange costume is just like, that's Wolverine.
Paul Neary was in there too, wasn't he? Paul Neary in that part.
Paul Neary inked Alan Davis, exactly.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
yeah, man. Just I love that costume. Yeah, man.
What about you, Swizz?
A couple other quick ones. All these are kind of based on black, but the Batman Beyond character, Terry.
Agreed.
I love that. Sweet. I love that as a futuristic cyberpunk take on Batman.
Killed it.
And as it relates to me dragging the old school Golden Age Catwoman cat costume design, the latter day version with the leather suit with the goggles and the combat boots, I love that look.
Mm-hmm. I think that was designed that by Darwin Cook, wasn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah,
I believe so.
Interesting.
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then also like. Just because it's just easy and it works, but because it's all the same look, but Black Panther, Wildcat, and Black Cat, they're all basically the same outfit.
Yeah.
black,
you know, dark colors.
Felicia Hardy, black cat.
Yeah, with the long silver hair, but I mean, she's wearing black.
Okay,
she's got claws. You know, they're all basically a take on that. You know, that kind of same look. And I always thought, you know, it just works easily for what they're trying to convey. Mm-hmm. And the last one, last two.
Okay.
Elektra.
Mm.
I think Elektra's design is really interesting. Mm. Even though she's showing a lot of skin, it's not necessarily to titillate.
It's functional.
It's more to give her freedom as a fighter. Right. not necessarily to show off her curves. And not that, I don't say that just because Frank Miller wasn't the greatest figure drawer in the world, which he was not. But I just thought that it worked. Even though she was, you know, trained by the hand and she was supposed to move in shadows, I just thought it worked. And then the last one is going to be going back to our man Bill Sienkiewicz, Moon Knight.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
Well, fucking yeah. Fucking A, hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Oh, D, unanimous. Oh, you going to speak up now. Okay.
Right.
Oh, dude. You feel good now, don't you?
right.
Good to you.
Right? Oh, you feel better now, motherfucker?
Let's see. No, you done fucked up, right?
Oh man.
No man. I agree, man. I think you know, Moon Knight, man, was the takeoff point for Bill, man. A lot, in so many ways, dude. I mean, he just said, okay, I'm tired of bothering me about being a Neil Adams clone. I got my own mind. I got my own skill set. That's what I'm gonna apply to this, man. And what really, when Bill hit his peak to me is when he fought Bushman, and when he fought the Morpheus.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When Morpheus is sitting there in that chair, dude, waiting for him, there's that perspective upshot where he's sitting there and his eyes are kind of like glowing black, if that's even possible to glow black. Bill did it, you know, and he's scratching his nails against the chair, talking about the things he's going to do to him, how he can't sleep, and so on and so forth. Brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah.
I got all those bad boys signed by Bill Sienkiewicz, yo. I stood in line, yo, and I got them done, yo. You know what I'm saying?
Nice.
had to do it.
Hey, you know, I was going to mention about, you were talking about Elektra's costume, Swizz, and how functional it was. You know, I was thinking of a particular instance in an issue of Daredevil during Frank Miller's run where her and Daredevil were going at it, right? And at some point, I think it's the same issue that ended with him with his foot getting caught in a bear trap. As ridiculous as that sounds, the rest of the issue is great. But at some point, no, I'm sorry. It was before that. It's when she was fighting off the hand and she was fighting off the invulnerable ninja assassin, Kurigi. And she's fighting him in this truck park and she's trying to kill him and she takes off her scarf and uses it to wrap him up and choke him with. Mm. I was like, oh, wow, okay. Okay, so it's just not all just the costuming. Like, she used whatever she had at her disposal to try and kill this unstoppable ninja. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And just for whatever reason, that design really only works to me, like, when Miller draws it. You know what I'm saying? Like, everyone else tries to make her super sexy, and it doesn't quite work, even though the costume is skimpy enough that, you might... could just do that, but it doesn't work. You know, it works better if she's more of a ninja, you know, like she was originated as. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I agree. 1,000%. Yes, sir.
Mm. Well, I've got three more real quick. I'll make it quick. Okay. Black Bolt, who's famous.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on.
That costume's always tight, dude. It's graphic-y. Mm-hmm. It's very understated, you know, like he is in character, but you know what his powers are. You know, if he ever unleashes those powers, you know, the secret to his majesty is the way he carries himself, and how he doesn't, he's understated. Like, he lets himself be, you know, talked down to. You can say what you want to say to him, but if you hurt his people, you know, it's on. You know, he'll open up on you. You know,
yeah, if I still, open my mouth on you,
it's over. It's game over. And the counter, what you guys are saying as far as Storm goes, Storm, the cat-eyed goddess, was my joint, yo. Scorn, the cat-eyed, when Cochran first designed her, she had cat eyes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that whole costuming to me, that whole long booted, you know, silver, is it silver, is it black? It's kind of cool because when she's got a diadem and stuff in her chest area, tiara, and when she uses her powers, you know, sometimes that reflects the nature of the storm and her cloaking, which mm-hmm. is very, very, very appropriate. Likewise, I'd say Phoenix, the green and gold version, classic, Jean Grey, Glenn Gilbert. Man, there's no better version of Phoenix to me than that, dude. When first time when you see her, like amplify her powers on Muir Isle, and Moira MacTaggert studying her abilities, she's talking about how, you know, how she feels. She's telling her, I feel this way about, you know, my powers. And John Byrne shows that look on her face and shadow. Man, fell in love, dude. Fell in love.
That concludes this episode of Sidebar Forever, hosted by Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson. You can find us online at sidebarforever.com. Any emails or questions can be directed to us at sidebarforever@gmail.com. And also, subscribe to us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Sidebar Forever is copyright 2020. Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson.